Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith, and today we are joined by Chicago astrologer Sonia Fox.
How are you today?
I'm fine. Lovely to be here.
Cool. We're glad to have you.
Thank you.
We've talked a little bit about astrology on the show, but like we've not had like anyone like that is an astrologer on before. So this is really exciting for us.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, we've talked a bunch already, and we're trying to figure out what's like the first. I know we were just talking about kind of how you were saying that, like, if it weren't for Chicago, you don't know that you would have been an astrologer. And we've talked a bit kind of about how you got into it. But would you mind telling our listeners kind of like what brought you to astrology and like kind of what confluence of events brought that together to help you find it?
Okay, it was, I think it was like 76 or 77. I just had gotten my BA in anthropology, which means if you can type well, you might be able to earn your living in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And I took a lot of courses at the Adler Planetarium, and then mostly navigation. I don't know why I was taking navigation, but I was. And I think I wanted to run away to the Caribbean and do a bar on a beach and be a beachcomber. But after I took a bunch of those, and they were really very interesting, I saw an ad for the Astrologer's Medium, which is now defunct, but used to be on Halsted Street, and I took their initial four-week class. And I said, well, okay, I'm not going to buy any more than $100 worth of books. Mm-hmm. And, well, I quickly did that, and then I've got shelves and shelves of astrology books now.
Wow.
And I was just totally hooked. I took their whole series there, took all the courses I could find around the Chicago Avenue, the Chicago area, went to all kinds of conferences. And then I started doing charts that were, one of the first charts I did was the old Mayor Daley's chart.
Okay.
Yeah, and that
wow, that's super. So what was, do you remember his chart? What was his chart?
He was a Taurus, as was okay. his son, and he had a very, very active chart. There's something called mutual receptions, which, mm-hmm. Astrologically technical, it means that if two planets are in each other's rule, like if Venus is in Aries and Mars is in Libra,
yeah,
they can sort of trade places because they're in each other's rule, and it's called mutual reception.
Wow.
Cool.
Okay, and Daley had a lot of those. You guys are too young to even, you probably barely remember his son at this point, but Daley was, he was phenomenal. There were times like during Vietnam, the only thing that was seemed to be holding America together was Chicago. Mm. And, Daley's chart was very, very active, and it's really interesting looking at his chart and his son's chart together. Mm-hmm. And, I certainly remember the night Chicago died. That was a thud heard around the world, in fact, I had an astrological friend. She was a waitress, very hard-living, hard-drinking waitress. She was working on Michigan Avenue at a restaurant called Tale of the Whale. And according to her, she told a lot of good tall tales. So I like the story. I don't know how true it is, okay? Mm-hmm. But she was going up the service elevator at 900 North Michigan. And apparently Mayor Daley's doctor was in that, and he was on the floor, and she said she stepped over his to get out, and that was like, and I just imagined that his dying breath, he was looking up Karen's skirts, right? So that's my tale, that's my fish story, that's my tale of the whale. Is that a good story?
Oh
yeah.
My God.
Yeah, well, I know... I think that's super interesting. I think talking about Tauruses, one of the things that I thought was super interesting was, because I've been keeping track of, like with this new moon in Aries directly after like a Mercury retrograde, like what right. the moon's been up to right now has been super interesting. And so it was super interesting to me when Maureen mentioned that you specifically wanted to make sure we recorded when the moon was in Taurus. So I'm curious for you.
What is
the Taurus energy? Like what?
It wasn't so much that it was in Taurus, but after the new moon, it would have.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it would have gone void of course,
mm-hmm.
and then it picks up, you know, direction and energy when it goes into the next sign. I mean, there's mm-hmm. all kinds of crazy. Don't do anything on a Mercury retrograde and stuff like that. But I got a new computer on my Mercury retrograde. It hasn't broken down yet, so
nice.
Yeah, you know, I hope.
Well, have you checked whether Mercury was in direct or in retrograde when you were born?
Oh, no, I have it natally retrograded.
Yeah, so do I, actually. Yeah, that's the reason why I brought it up. It's like I actually weirdly flourish in being unreachable sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what that is, but...
Mine's retrograde and it's direct state. It's very good for history. I love mm-hmm. history. That's one application of astrology that, you know, I can get lost for days in it. But
you were mentioning before we started, because we were kind of talking about the relationship with like astronomy and astrology, and you know, you'd mentioned that like, astrology is really like the artistic version of the science of astronomy.
I didn't mean to paraphrase you. Right. It's astronomy is the science of space, astrology, the art of time.
Okay.
And it's a metaphysical art because, the terrestrial axis of rotation. I see time as being geocentric. I've got an article I call "In Defense of Ptolemy," because Ptolemy had a geocentric world where everything went around. But I see the Ptolemaic vision actually as the planets and the solar system affect the terrestrial axis of rotation.
Mm.
You know, ever see the Ptolemaic model where it has those funny little epicycles that accounts for the retrograde period?
Interesting.
Yeah, I think that there's something, the Earth, the wobble, there's a wobble of the axis of rotation, you know, and then within the wobble there's these little kinds of, they look epicycles, and I think if you do a vector analysis of the retrograde cycles of the planets, I couldn't do the math, but I think those might add up. I think they are called Chandler something or other, mm-hmm. Chandler wobble or something. Yeah, because I was into it. I was writing a paper for a class I was taking, and I was getting deeply into it. But as I see it, time itself is geocentric. When planets appear, they don't go retrograde in space. They go retrograde in time because they seem to, and when they go around the bend of their orbit around the sun, it seems like they're going backwards, which of course they aren't, but that's the way it affects the terrestrial axis of rotation, because mm-hmm. I also believe everything out there spinning generates its own temporal prism, which is they're looking for planets that we can live on, but can we, you know, because it, even if the physical conditions are would support life as we know it. I mean, if you had an axis of rotation that took longer for it to rotate about itself than it did to orbit about its central star, wouldn't it take our DNA apart? I mean, you know, we'd have, you know, if we could survive that, we'd have to evolve to those kinds of things, and we'd mm-hmm. evolve into other kinds of creatures.
Right, because what you were saying is that very, very basic in our DNA is our, like, coded into our DNA is the concept of day and night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how long those that time period lasts. And yeah. It's, and I remember, because what I was, what when we were talking about it, I was saying that it's like, it's relative to us in a way, because we have put, like, because you were mentioning that scientists have, the way they measure the atomic clock is through a cesium atom, right?
Yeah.
And that is a very exact science, but the way that we perceive time is more relative to our own experience.
Well, yeah, but it's also not entirely subjective insofar as, it's the day and day and night, the monthly cycle, the annual cycle, plus all the other little stuff running around the solar system that adds piquancy to, provenance to the time.
Go ahead.
Were you going to continue on this train of thought?
I was going to ask about something else.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm wondering, so as, like, both Daniel and I are, like, fairly knowledgeable about, like, what the different, like sun signs mean. I'm wondering, like, you know, with your expertise and your knowledge, if you could kind of, like, run down the different signs and kind of, like, common traits found with each one.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, everybody's read a sun signs column.
Right.
The cardinal signs are the ones that begin the seasons. Aries, Cancer, Libra, and Capricorn. They initiate things. Aries is a fire sign, so fire has to do with spirit more than spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
Sun is spirit. Moon is soul. The midheaven is character. The ascendant is personality. You know, and they kind of that's my categorization. You know, and Mercury is the planet of communication, intelligence. It rules Virgo and Gemini, and it also has status in Aquarius. So these are all. Well, Gemini is the Aries is first cardinal sign. It's a fire sign. It's ruled by Mars. It can be very argumentative, assertive, aggressive. Taurus is its qualities are your values, your possessions. Taurus likes its comforts, value. It's ruled by Venus, beauty, often, into property, you know. One's own values. The opposite of it is Scorpio, and that's other people's, you know, sex, death, and other people's money. You know. Gemini, which is is ruled by Mercury. It has to do with neighborhood, short distance travel, early education, siblings, brothers and sisters. Cancer, or a fourth sign, is cardinal again. It's a water sign. It has to do with home, family, deep roots, your ethnic roots. Leo is it's the sign of the ruler. Spirited, has children, entertainment, loyalty. Virgo is a human sign, ruled by Mercury, very precise. It can not see the forest for the tree. Get so involved in counting the leaves, you don't see the forest there. Perfectionist. Libra is the only non-organic, non-breathing sign in the zodiac. The others are animals or people, but Libra is a machine, mechanical. You know, equinox. You know, the day. You know, it's the scales, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Scorpio is interesting. It's sex, death, and other people's money are the key words for it. It's intense. They say it has three levels. And it's ruled by Pluto and Mars. And Pluto is, you know, it's kind of out there in the, what's that belt called? You know, the Van Kuiper belt. Mm-hmm. It's our first ambassador there. And it has a very irregular orbit. You know, it's, and I think that is because it is, it's so far out, it is subject to more galactic forces than, you know, than the other planets, which are closer to the sun and keep to a more regular orbit. And I think it's sort of like, it's our ambassador to, is it the Van Oort belt? Well, whatever, I think it connects us with galactic energy because it's so far out. Mm-hmm. And Sagittarius is ruled by Jupiter. It's an expansive sign. It's a fire sign. One thinks of it as the, you know, it isn't a blazing fire sign, blazing fire like Aries and Leo is more of a sustaining kind of thing. Sagittarius is sort of those hot glowing coals in the fire. But it's a sign, upper knowledge, it's half man, half horse. But it's judges, upper, you know, professional education. It's a sign of expansion. It, you know, you've got luck. If you're having a Sagittarius, if you're having a Jupiter aspect, lucky day. You know, they combine differently and make different sentences. Capricorn. It's an earth sign. It's a cardinal earth. It's ambition is its career ambition. Its keyword is I use. You know, strategy is a Capricornian thing. Aquarius is the water bearer, but it's an air sign, which I always find kind of, and that's, I wrote to at First Sip, you know, with all the teacups, and, mm-hmm. and Gigi and Aaron are Aquarius, mm-hmm. and the water bearer, and I just think also the cup bearer, you know, all those cups that they have hanging there.
Yeah, that is super interesting, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of cool, and I really think they should get a really nice poster, you know, an Aquarius poster.
I think that would be, it's actually, it's interesting for me because I'm an Aries, and so I'm like, you know, guns a-blazing. I'm like all energy. I'm like, let's go. I'm like very talkative. I'm very social. And then my two bosses are both Aquarius, and they're both just like, they're very internal. They're pretty reserved. They're, you know, they're very artistic and expressive, but like in a less ostentatious way than I am. And so it's an interesting, it's kind of like an exercise in patience for me, mm-hmm. being kind of like led by two more reserved folks.
But Uranus, which is rules Aquarius, has been in Aries for, you know, it's now like at the end of Aries and it's going to go into Taurus, but it's been in Aries for a while, and it's a mutual reception now. I told you how mutual because Mars is, it'll be in mutual reception when Mars goes into Aquarius. It's in Capricorn now.
So because mm-hmm. it was in Sagittarius for a while.
Oh, yeah. Mars takes about 2 years to mm-hmm. go around the zodiac. And, it when it goes like retrograde, sometimes it seems to be in a sign for, the better part of a year. I think, I was born during World War II, and I think Mars was in Gemini then. It was a return of the U.S. Mars, which is in Gemini, but it was there for a long, long time. You know, it just, where Mercury takes about a month to go through a sign, if less, mm-hmm. you know, because it makes four trips around, in an Earth year, it goes around the sun four times. But because, you know, its strange little pattern of retrograde, retrogradation. It doesn't quite fit in quite that tightly. Mm. But, yeah, then Aquarius is, I think these energies are Aquarian now. I see the computer as, you know, the first child of Aquarius. And I was talking before about we used to have all kinds of different sorts of arguments. Exactly when does the age of Aquarius begin? And actually, I think we're in it now. I think it's begun. And, you know, have you ever encountered talk of the singularity?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, what are your thoughts of it?
I think it's really scary, the thought of, like, human and robotic consciousness combining. I think
you can see it happening, though.
I can too, and I don't like it.
I think that there's like a fear that one has to win out in that scenario, but I also recognize that there's kind of like a lot of bionics, you know, where it is like a organic entity first. You know what I mean? Like when we like a hearing aid is a bionic thing. You know, like what's it called when you have a limb? You're missing a limb, and you have a.
Oh right, and they're doing it with those 3D printers. With
yeah, I mean that's not that's a very easy step from that to kind of thinking about like humanity and technology, like augmenting
and taking
each
your
other.
Brain out before you die.
I mean, that's, I think that's
accident.
Where it gets the. You know what I mean? That's where we start getting to kind of other things. I hear the heater kicking on a bit, so I want to finish the 12 before we have to take a break. We might have to take a break. This is something that we have to do sometimes on the podcast because we're like in a basement apartment in Chicago. Sometimes our radiator starts hissing really loudly. But so before that happens, let's. Could you mind if we hit Pisces?
Oh, not at all.
Mm-hmm.
Pisces is 12th house. It's a spiritual sign. Pisces rules institutions like hospitals, jails. It's ruled by Neptune, which dissolves boundaries. Saturn establishes boundaries. Says, okay, here and no farther. Pisces dissolves boundaries, and it's a sign of, you know, like unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's also... If you have a strong Neptune aspect, the liar or illusionist, it also rules illusions and lies.
Well, so I actually have and I'm sorry to cut you off.
Oh no, please do.
My question then is this super relates to something that you mentioned earlier, which is kind of your passion for history. I think that's super interesting because kind of, I don't know if the listeners are familiar with this conceptually, but the idea of the Age of Aquarius is this whole idea that, what is it called, the 2000 year period, that the ages, right, is basically what it is.
Right.
So we just came out of the Age of Pisces.
Well, that was the Caesar Christ thing at, you know, at 0 BC.
Right.
And here's West equinox, you know, the crossing of the ecliptic and the Earth's equator. Now that mm-hmm. that's where the equinox is. Well, that precesses, and it was at zero Aries sidereal. You know, there's no star at zero Aries, but the star sign of Aries.
Mm-hmm.
It was at zero Aries about with Ptolemy, about 221 A.D., and it processes at the rate of 1 degree per 72. It takes 72 years to precess a degree. Precess means goes backwards. Well, the solstice point, zero Capricorn. That hit zero Capricorn sidereal. Wait, no, 1999 that processed and it hit the galactic edge. Okay, now it's going to press, and that's where they start. That's where the epic started, and that solstice point is going to precess to the degree of the galactic center. In another Pluto cycle, about 227, 2227, 2227.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, just about the winter solstice, the next time Pluto enters Capricorn. And that's what I take for the singularity. That's where I think the singularity is. Because it'll be all lined up with the center, the galactic center. And I think that's the moment of, you know, where the Doppler effect, where it just builds up, and there's whatever, and then, you know, after that conjunction, it trails off. But the Mayans studied this, and they have a whole ceremony called the raising of the sky, which has to do with the Milky Way, which is that's the galactic circle, when do you know what the Orion looks like in the sky, and the skirt of Orion, the triangle at the bottom of Orion, that's the place of creation, and all of the hearths in the Mayan hearths are triangular, and there's something called a fire stick, which, you know, and you rotate a stick against something until it hits off sparks, and then it makes a fire. But they have that in the sky. But they would wait till that was at the western horizon setting, and light a fire, and it was the raising of the sky. And then 6 hours later, when that was at the nadir, that was at the midnight point, and then the opposite point was like a head on top. That was raising the sky. That was when, you know, everything was in its right place. Mm. And as with precession, the angle between they had a lot of old villages that were not directly on cardinal directions, but they were more with the relation of the galactic edge. And you could time when the villages were made by the angle. I can send you a copy.
That's super interesting.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, that was when I was doing my paper. I ran across that, and I thought I love the Mayans. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they really had a galactic consciousness.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, so we should pause for a second. I'm so sorry to do that.
Oh no.
All right, we're back. Thank you for being patient with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Yeah. So I really love that the conversation we've had so far, and I like that. You know, I think that one of the things that we're finding, because like I've been into astrology since I was like 14, and I'm really loving the resurgence of it, kind of like in dialogue with other people. Like I'm finding that it's very much like something that people are interested in. And hearing about right now for some reason.
Oh,
I don't know why. Yeah, I don't know why. It's well, I mean, like I said, like I started paying attention and thinking about signs very young, so I've always been into it. So like for now, all of a sudden, for people to be asking me about like, oh, well, what does this sign mean? Like, what does that mean? It's super interesting to me. And so giving people a way to kind of like have the framework, you know, because I think the framework in some ways is something that you either like spend a long time understanding yourself, or like you take courses on, or you know what I mean, like with the framework of the planets, the framework of the signs, and all the stuff like that. But in a lot of ways, that is like this larger framework. And I'm also kind of interested, you know, as we think about like these universalities, as we think about its relationship to the planets, to like the galaxies, like how do for you, when you sit down and you're like, okay, this is my frame of knowledge, right? This is the things that I know. How do you then, when you're sitting down with someone's chart, what's the experience of kind of making that, all of that,
Gel?
Relevant? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Gel is probably a better word.
Yeah. Well, I sort of, yeah, I look at the chart and I look for the strong plan, you know, the angles, you know, mm-hmm. midheaven, the ascendant, and stuff like that. Ruler of the sun. And I look, you know, I look for, you know, the strengths in the chart. Which planets are well placed? Which are in mutual reception? You know, what are accidentally honored, like on the angles or things like that. Just the general vibe of it, and the way astrologers kind of consider Sun out through Mars. Those are personal energies. Those are in the sandbox, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the energies I use in the astro gizmo. And then beyond Mars, where you have Jupiter and Saturn, and then Uranus, Neptune, Pluto, those are generational.
Yeah, and, because they change so infrequently.
Right.
Right.
Right. It takes Pluto, 247 years to go around the zodiac.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, if you... My Pluto started out in Leo. It's now in Capricorn. Yeah, you mm-hmm. know, which is a good piece there. I don't know if I'll see a Pluto opposite. Probably not. But mm-hmm.
So this actually brings up a really interesting question for me, because it's something that I in my kind of understanding of charts and things is something that I still don't entirely understand, and that is, I mean, what. When you look at, like, Neptune, Uranus, and Pluto, these things that are, you know, I mean, like, most people that are born within 2 years of me also, so my Neptune and my Uranus are both in Capricorn. And so I think that it's, the one I'm thinking of is, which one's further away?
Oh.
Uranus?
Neptune. So Pluto's the farthest out one, and only it goes for a while. It goes inside the orbit of Neptune
okay.
for a while, and then it goes out beyond it. But Pluto, Neptune, Uranus, mm-hmm. Saturn, Jupiter, and then, you know, into the sun there. Yeah.
But so then these things, I mean, do you think that those influences really make for a lot of similarities within people that are born within a couple of years of each other? Or are those things that maybe just aren't as prominent in the chart?
Well, it's like, it establishes generational values.
Sure.
I mean, you know, that whole, I think there were three planets that were, you know, it was, Neptune, Uranus, and there was another big guy up there. Could have been Sat. I'd have to look. You know, look at my ephemera. I have my ephemeris here.
Cool.
But I did a big study of Neptune Pluto conjunctions. It's the Phoenix. They happen about once every 500 years. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, they go back and forth, and then there's the opposition. But those you can see like trends and things. The last Jupiter, the last Pluto Neptune conjunction. It's called the Phoenix because 500 years was 1892. They conjuncted three times.
Bossy cat.
But it usually starts like a new epic. I did a study from Cyrus and Daniel. Cyrus and Daniel were born about 600 BC,
mm-hmm.
and that was Neptune Pluto. The opposition was around the time of Alexander, and because of the back and forthing of it all, and those are so slow moving, there are about 11 or 12 exact oppositions, and those seem to correlate so well with his various conquests. I mean, he just represented, and then the next conjunction was Caesar and Christ in 84 BC, when Caesar, you know, flipped the bird to Sulla and said, I'm going to marry who I want to marry, and, you know, watch out, dude, kind of thing. And that, you know, that started, you know,
mm-hmm.
an epic, a huge epic. But just following those, you can see how different, you know, these historical epics fit in. That's what makes history and astrology so exciting, because you look beyond the personal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the personal stuff always is operating. And, yeah, if your Uranus is on somebody else's Mars, there's going to be, you know, explosions of energy and anger. My brother's Uranus is on my Mars. Mm-hmm. I used to beat the shit out of him when he was... I mean, he called me the monster, and he doesn't talk. You're right, but and then when he got, you know, when he, you know, he was younger than I, and when he, you know, got larger, I really couldn't do that, you know. But they work interpersonally, but they establish more historical kinds of epics. Mm-hmm. Going. And you know, it's fascinating. You know, it just I did a big study on Caesar. The only major historian out there who Theodore Mommsen, he's the only one I agree with in that Caesar was born in 102 BC. Most of because the first 10 pages of Suetonius's essay on Caesar, you know, Julius, are missing. He doesn't have a birth date there. And so they don't know whether it was 100 BC, 101 BC, or 102 BC, but I did a very close study matching his, you know, his life to, you know, to the progressions of a chart, and I'm convinced it was like July 12th, 102 BC, Aquarius rising. He had Mercury at its direct station right on his seventh cusp, and then when it went forward through, it progressed through his life, it went forward, then it turned back, and then it went back to where it started, and then it went direct to its point of retrogradation, and that was his life. It was I called it Hermes Trismegistus, because he went over his Mercury went over the same territory thrice. It went forward, back, and then forward again. And that, wow. and that was his lifespan. You know, plus there were other things going on, but it fit the various high points and conquests and whatever in his life so well that, you know, that has to be it, kind of thing. You know, and if you come up with a birth certificate that proves me wrong, go ahead. You know, I'm always willing to, you know, to correct, kind of thing. But I that was my first big, you know, big historical kind of thing. And I did a huge study of the United. Ever hear of Tecumseh's curse?
That sounds very familiar.
It is sometimes called the curse on the 0-year presidents. Ever since William Henry Harrison, every president, minor exceptions, elected in a 0-year, has died in office.
Wow.
And it was called Tecumseh's curse, and there was a legend made up around it, but it was the legend arose in 1940 when some newspaper reporter noticed that the 0-year phenomena. And he labeled it Tecumseh's curse because Harrison had to do with it. I'm real expert on this, the War of 1812. Mm. It has to do with the War of 1812 and, you know, Tippecanoe and Tyler too and all that. But I did a big study of the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction and the American political cycles, which... there you have like outer planets, you know, establishing sort of historical epochs.
Right, because that's kind of really where it probably comes more into play, is because that's where you see those shifts more, I feel. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's super interesting.
Yeah, and you know, the personal stuff, well, I mean, that's all very interesting. And, you know, I always saw, oh, gee, what kind of chart does this guy have kind of thing. But at the moment, I'm working on the death of Kit Marlowe, and somehow the Earl of Essex is involved in some way. And there are about four different possible birth dates for Essex. And, yeah. And if it's the one that seems to have the best documentary evidence for, I mean, that guy is such a loser. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, he has a very weak chart. And given what a swathe he it's hard to believe that chart and that man match. You seem...
Yeah. So I think this is actually really interesting, because something that I know that, when we've been talking with people, especially as you've been getting more into astrology because of me, as we've been talking to people about, like, what some of, like, the reasons why we're really into thinking about it, what I find is that it makes me think about people in a much more complex way. I feel like, another, like, it'd be really, it's really easy to go through life and just see people and be like, this is what you are, you know? Like, and I'm doing a, like, you're a panel, you know, like you're a
sweeping generalization
model. right, you're like one-dimensional. Mm-hmm. But in so many ways humanity is so much more than that. I think that's super, it's when you start thinking about people in terms of charts or in terms of multiple influences, you finally start building this thing where, like, maybe you can potentially give someone the benefit of the doubt for some reason, or
yeah,
plethora of things. But so where I'm going at with this specifically is, it's interesting when you talk about this kind of work that you're doing in writing, because that is when you, that's a direct application in a creative and artistic way of that idea of making characters and making characters. I'm talking about in the, like, literal playwriting sense, but also, like, in talking about doing biographical work or doing historical work, thinking about the people that were making history in a way that isn't just like, you know, I feel like when you first talk about Caesar, even, it's really easy to just kind of, or Alexander the Great, you know, it's really easy to paint him as just like one thing, you know. But I think that it's interesting hearing you talk about the complexity of historical figures.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
It's not a complete thought, but
I do that a lot.
Well, right. Something that I will sometimes act, you know, we will oftentimes have actors come on here who are portraying historical figures.
Oh, that's always interesting.
Like, we had, you know, there we had a bunch of people come on who are characters who were in a play about Joan of Arc, and so I asked the woman who was portraying Joan of Arc in this play, I asked her, you know, these characters, you know, these iconic characters that we all grew up knowing their names, like, oh, Joan of Arc, blah blah blah, you know, they have a larger than life persona, and so how do you, as an actor who has to portray this person as a person, you know, how do you handle taking a larger than life persona and making it human and making it accessible? And so I think that kind of looking at it, like, kind of what you're doing with these historical charts.
Right.
It's like, oh yeah, you know, Alexander the Great was, you know, great leader, many conquests, blah, blah, blah. But, like, his, you know, his Aries is in Capricorn, and so it means that, or
right.
Well, nonsense, but like,
and I think we're kind of where it is relevant to what you were saying was that you were saying, like, that all of these things are, you know, if someone shows you a birth chart in a different way, it's open to a different interpretation. And I think that is kind of the sense I generally feel about astrology, is that there is this openness to different interpretations. And I think that is very much, it's a very artistic mindset. And I guess,
metaphysical.
Oh man, I'm not coming to a question. This happens sometimes on the show where I'm just, like, so interested in the thing that we're talking about.
Okay. That I'm like, you have an opinion.
Yeah.
You're allowed.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I do appreciate that.
So I know that, you know, we've been speaking largely about kind of, like, you know, what astrology and kind of like the movement of the planets can mean, like, historically and on a larger front. And but I know that something that you do work on is how it can dictate compatibility, and you actually do something pretty interesting that's outside of, like, the normal, like, oh, like, you know,
he's what's your sign?
Yeah, like, he's a Cancer, she's a Scorpio. Obviously, that, you know, obviously it would go.
It's kismet.
Yeah, exactly. But you actually have started using the I Ching to discuss compatibility. Would you mind talking a little bit about that?
Oh no, I'd like to, but I another one of my overriding path. I'm really into astro twins, you know, people who are born the same day and close to the same time, and, you know, what parallels are there. And one of my favorite that has to do with two of my favorites in Chicago, University of Chicago, Al Capone and Robert Maynard Hutchins. Do you know who Robert Maynard Hutchins was? He was the boy wonder of Yale, and he became the fifth president and the first chancellor of the University of Chicago in 1929.
Wow.
But both Al Capone and Robert Maynard Hutchins. Al Capone was born about 12 hours after Robert Maynard Hutchins.
Wow.
17th and 18th of January, 1899. Both in Brooklyn, about 3 miles apart, and they both had such a monster effect on Chicago, you know.
Wow.
You know, and that, and also Barbra Streisand and Richie Daley, are about they were born a half hour apart.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Same place like that, or?
Oh, well, Richard was born in, Chicago, right. And Barbara was born in Brooklyn.
Right, right.
Yeah, but it's just, if you look at, I think there's so much of, what Daley did in Chicago, especially, well, Chicago's very Art Deco anyway, mm-hmm. But I think there's so much of the same sensibility there. Oh, and also Charlie Chaplin and Adolf Hitler are 4 days apart.
That's wild,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's one of Hitler's one of Chaplin's movies. Hitler used to do watercolors, and mm-hmm. you can look them up on the internet. But there's one watercolor that looks like, you know, a sketch for one of the scenes for a Chaplin movie. It's kind of. Oh, isn't that wild?
That is, yeah.
Yeah, and have you ever seen The Great Dictator?
No.
Chaplin's understand, you know, they're fooey, you know, and it's little Barbara who's mistaken for it and stuff like that, but it plays on the parallels, and that's something that has dazzled, you know, and intrigued me for ages, you know.
That is really interesting.
Yeah.
Well, and so my sister-in-law is a twin, and I've always been, and we were talking over the holidays or whenever we saw them last, we were talking about, like, we did each other's charts and stuff like that, and my sister-in-law is a Scorpio. And so, obviously, so was her twin. And so they have the same rising, they have the same sun, they have the same moon.
Right.
How
many minutes apart are they, or don't you know?
Like 14 or something.
Okay.
They're both.
Is that a dog?
Yeah. So one of our cats is in the window, and so dogs walk past and bark at the cats. Neither of them have particularly, like, Scorpio traits, and so we were talking about, like, it would make sense, like, oh, they're twins, and, you know, they're both Scorpios. It would make sense if one of them was more Scorpio than the other, but neither of them particularly are. But, I don't know. I didn't really have a point there, but speaking about...
Sip Dobbins, who's now passed, she used to specialize in twins, and she'd figure out what the, you know, the tiny differences in like two degrees on the midheaven is like 8 minutes apart.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, and well, the twins that are born like, you know, 11:59, you know, and 2:01 on December, right. You know, but that's all. And she would look for the very nuanced differences between them that, you know, at that age. And then when, you know, apparently twins like to differentiate themselves, you know, establish their own identities, you know, so sometimes they deliberately take different paths.
Is that where the practice of marking down the exact time comes from? Because they've been marking down the exact time for a while, haven't they?
I think that's like medical.
Pre-medical. I was going to say, because you can look up most historical figures' times, can't you? Or at least some of them.
Some of them. I mean, like, Suetonius is really great on the Caesars. I mean, mm-hmm. they're like, so-and-so was born at... He laid the infant at, I think it was Nero. He was born, like, mm-hmm. right around sunrise or something mm-hmm. like that. But he says, you know, you can get... There are some historical people who have very, very well-timed charts.
Mm-hmm.
They're usually the upper classes and stuff right. like that. And there's some of them that are just lost souls. You say, geez, I wish I knew what his birth... You know, and you look and you can't find anything. You know, but, that's what, you know... But there are some that go, you know, pretty far back. You know, the Caesars, some of them have very, very nicely timed charts. Augustus, you know, he had that coin with Capricorn on the reverse. Capricorn's on the reverse because he was telling you where his moon was. He was a late Virgo with a Capricorn moon. And, you know, moon went into Aquarius that day, so, but there's one of, but that's, you know, that's how you can time it, you know.
So I'm wondering, could you explain, just because, like, when we've been doing kind of like a hack job of doing people's charts, people have kind of asked us what does your sun sign mean, what does your rising sign mean, and what does your moon sign mean? Can you give, like, a quick explanation of the difference between those three?
Yeah, your sun, the sun is, you know, your basic energy, your spirit. It's mediated by your moon, which I identify with soul. And the rising sign has to do with the filter through which, you know, your lens through which you view the world and other people view you, your presentation of self. In other, I consider that the personality,
mm-hmm.
the okay. midheaven, the character. Sun spirit, moon soul, ascendant personality, midheaven character,
wow.
or profession. I mean, those are the basic categories.
Cool.
And, you know, depending on if your sun's very powerfully aspected, that will, you know, you'll come across, you know, as your sun sign. Again, if, you know, if you've got something very strong on your ascendant or midheaven, that will be a dominant note in your presentation. But those are the general four factors that that I deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool.
And there's all kinds of crazy things in astrology.
It's super interesting. And we actually only have a few minutes left. But if you've been listening and you've been super interested in this, we're going to plug this now, but you're going to be doing readings at First Sip, right?
Yes, I'll be there on Thursday from 5 to 9 if anybody is interested in finding out what your I Ching hexagram is based on your astrological energies. I'll be there with my ephemeris and we'll figure yours out.
Cool.
And please stop by and have a cup of coffee.
Yeah. No, definitely have a cup of coffee. But
yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me. I had a lot of fun with you.
Yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Okay.
Cool. Well, thank you all so much for listening. I've been Daniel Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
If you want to keep up with what we're up to, there are so many ways you can do that. The first is to head over to scopymag.com. That's our website. We post all of our articles there, as well as all of our podcast episodes. Otherwise, you can keep up with us on the old social media. On Facebook, our page is Scopy Magazine, and we also have a Facebook group that we post in regularly and keep up with and chat with folks and have and talk about what we're all interested in, stuff like that. A lot of astrology memes go through there, so if you've enjoyed this conversation, check out Sounding Board, is what it's called. And if you can't find it, shoot us an email or shoot either Maureen or me or the Facebook page a message, and we'll get you set up. Otherwise, you can keep up with you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr under Scopy Mag, and you can also find the podcast under Scopy Radio wherever you find podcasts.
And as always, I am here to emphasize the importance of subscribers. We're kind of retooling how we see a do you mind if we just like cut in me explaining this later?
Sure.
Cool. All right. So give a little.
Let's just cut it.
Great, let's cut it.